There's a new sparkling water beverage from the makers of Bubbly, Bubbly Burst.
It's bursting with fruit flavor, no added sugar, and all smiles.
Bubbly comes in a variety of 6 fun flavors that taste incredible. And with no added sugar and low calories, there's a lot to smile about.
I don't know about you, Matt, but it's my perfect beverage for catching up on my favorite shows with.
Yes, Lil Bowen. Bubbly Burst has antioxidant and immune support, keeping me feeling great all day long.
You deserve that. Try new Bubbly Burst.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting 2 young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Look, Matt.
Where?
Oh, I see. Wow.
Oh, my.
Bowen, look over there.
Wow, is that culture?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Las Culturistas.
Ding, ding dong. Las Culturistas calling.
You really dug into those syllables, my friend.
Today isn't ding dong. Today is ding dong. Like, today is...
Let's go.
You got to give the ding and the dong a little something extra today for the culture.
I mean, if you say so, because you, point of transparency for the listeners, for RPEKFs, I asked Matt if he wants to do the year this year. I know we've been a little bit behind. Trust and believe, the segment is not done. We've got many more years to go.
Mm-hmm.
But Matt said, I don't think we can today because, and he flashed his phone screen in front of me on the Zoom. He said, we've got a lot to cover. And I said, you're right.
We have so much to talk about. And not for nothing, but all of these things could all have their own episode.
Ooh.
So I just feel as though it's a little crowded this week to then, can you imagine like Oscar week, like the big pop girly album that's out, like Dune 2 is out, like the royal family is finally maybe in complete shambles. Like I saw Madonna.
All it took was Photoshop to kill the royal family.
We will get into it. But what I'm saying is, I feel like, can you imagine if we just didn't talk about all this and we're like, so what happened in 2013? Like, that doesn't make sense to me.
I know. No, there's stuff happening in 2024 that we really need to address.
And that's actually real culture number 9.
There's stuff happening in 2024 that we really need to address.
I want to start by saying, and maybe this will make a segue into one of those topics, but Bowen, you crushed this last week. You were so good.
That's very nice.
But if you didn't watch SNL yet, Bowen and Ariana Grande did, who is the musical guest, she did an amazing job. They did a Moulin Rouge sketch, which could not have been easy to do. And I know you, my girl. Like, you put your foot in that one.
The hardest thing about it was just selling it as an idea because God love this man and the producers, but Lorne and the top brass at SNL have this note with everything where they're like, why now?
Yeah.
And thankfully, and it was Lauren's idea. It was like, tie it into the Oscars. The Oscars are this weekend. We're like, okay, sure. And then I looked it up. I was like, oh, Moulin Rouge. The first musical nominated for Best Picture since Beauty and the Beast.
Mm.
So like there was a long stretch of time. I guess that's what I'm doing the math. Beauty and the Beast was 89 or 90. That was like 91.
91, 92, something like that.
That's a full decade.
Yeah.
But now, of course, Best Picture, and ever since the extension to 10 films, and we'll get into the Oscars later, mm-hmm. but now it's like, oh, movie musicals are, I guess, kind of commonplace in that category.
When Moulin Rouge came out, I remember that was like, it feels like one of a million times that you've heard like the musical is back. And then all of a sudden, like you'll hear the musical's out again and then it will come back. Like really what I think happens is when a movie is good, then that genre is back. If you can believe that people are sort of hyperbolic about the way they talk about these things, especially as it relates to the film industry, like that is what happens. But yeah, Moulin Rouge, the thing that's so great about it, and the why now doesn't even really matter because it's so iconic that, like, when you see her in that wig and that sateen wig and, like, you using that voice and, like, them doing this song, even that set, like...
The set, we got to give it up to the folks at SNL Production Design. They really, Leo Yoshimura, legend, was like, we can't do it. And I was like, okay, well, whatever you guys come up with will be fine. And I love these people, but of course they have to pull off the impossible every week.
Yeah.
And they made it look incredible. And that little like palanquin thing on top of the elephant took up so much space on the floor that we could not bring our guests to We Can't Be Friends for the first musical performance because there was just no room. And I was like, oh, damn. Well, I feel bad about that. I feel bad that the guests at SNL could not, the guests of cast could not go to the floor and watch that song.
First of all, guests of cast will be just fine. I think what happens there is they watch it from the back and they see her other performance and they're totally fine. What was important is that you guys were literally given the actual physical space and emotional space to deliver that sketch. Sure. It was really funny. Like, you guys should definitely check it out. And I really liked the other sketch too, which was the People Pleasers Anonymous. I thought that was really funny.
Thank you. Thank you. Allison Gates.
Overall, what an amazing episode.
Josh Brolin. What a gem.
He's really good.
Really good. Really consummate professional. Great, perfect example of a host. Yeah. Lovely, lovely man.
To say nothing of Ms. Scarlett Johansson.
Oh my goodness.
Crushing Katie Britt. I really hope this doesn't become a Tina Fey, Sarah Palin thing, because that means that Katie Britt will have become part of the culture. And I really don't want that. But I said, I haven't seen Scarlett Johansson tear up comedy like this since Don John.
Which I haven't seen. That's
you haven't seen Don John?
Egg on my face.
Oh my God. Like, that's such a good one.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt?
Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who I believe also wrote and directed it.
And good for him.
Scarlett Johansson plays just like that Long Island, Staten Island girl. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just like it's, and she's having a lot of fun with it. And she's like so like hot that it's so funny. And it's just a really good
one. She's good at that.
Yeah.
I mean, like, who could forget? Look at this one. Look at that one.
Look at this one. You got to buy a chandelier. We were joking. we were joking the other day. Like, someone was saying like, oh, Scarlett Johansson as Katie Britt. Like, that's her best comedy performance of her entire career. I was like, yeah, well, it's up there with like, you look at this one, look at that one, the chandeliers. And I was like, oh, not everyone knows that sketch.
It's so funny.
But also, she did another SNL sketch. God. It was, I think it was
with Keenan, where she was the funeral singers.
That's so good. And then she also did a really good Deep House Dish back in the day. Deep House Dish is, of course, my favorite sketch of all time.
James Anderson.
That series of sketches, James Anderson. But she did a song called Cold Check. This jacket's expensive.
Oh, so good. Scarjo.
I love it.
What a gem.
Well, that was really, really great. And, you know, just to talk about her performances, you must have been able to see them live a bunch.
Ari stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw her sound check. Just those songs are really, really, really good. The whole album. What do you want to start off with? The album?
Let's talk about the album. Yeah, I have to say, like, I am so obsessed with this. And, like, I can't remember a time when I was so into an album immediately, but actually it dropped at 9 p.m. in LA because we were on the way to see Madonna. Yeah. And so I made like a last minute decision to go see Madonna, like, because
I love
the night of, I guess people sell their tickets on Ticketmaster. So the prices kind of dip, but I was like, you know what? What am I, crazy? Like, I'm not going to go see Madonna. Like, of course I'm going to go. And so we'll get to that later, but on the way there, we listened to the whole album, like, I think it was like all the way through, and then we started it over again. I am, as someone who's like culture, and like that made me say culture is, for me, is very much like that late 90s Mariah, you know, like, this is very much my shit. Like,
it's very that.
Like, tell me that something is more for me than these R&B vocals over these like sexy little hooks, this vocal stacking, all these harmonies, this like avalanche of harmonies she does. Her vocal production, she really shows the girls how it's done with these like singer-songwriter lyrics, like with like dance influences. And like, I just feel.
I feel. And so does she.
I feel that.
I think I have my favorite Ari pre-chorus hook of mm-hmm. all time, which is something about him is made for somebody like me, baby, come on. It's so like, she's a siren, that girl.
Yeah. In terms of vocals, obviously, there's no one in her like peer group that really is capable of what she can do. And I don't even mean just like singing down like all over the place. Mm-hmm. What I mean is like she, and I don't know if it's because of Wicked or just because of like a way that she's matured or a way that she feels she needs to serve this particular album, but the storytelling is better than it's ever been. And I wonder like, and not to do that thing of like, she doesn't enunciate back in the day, but like, you know, she was loose with the way that she would like phrase, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, and she would give it a lot of stylization. Whereas this is just like very direct. She's in like this different register than she is oftentimes, like, so that you really feel like there's something else that's important to her here, which is like telling this story of this, these relationships, you know, mm-hmm. and how they interact with each other. And this concept of the Eternal Sunshine thing, because it really is lightly like a concept album.
Yeah. And I think of it as like not necessarily biographical or autobiographical, I should say.
I don't think it is. Yeah.
Like, I think the big tell is her use of the word like, got to get out of this like situationship. It's like, okay, this is kind of, there are liberties being taken with like, real life experiences. And that's all I'll say. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it is this thing of what I love that I think she hasn't done in her albums is like poses a question at the beginning, answers it by the end. Love it. Perfect circle.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that she's spoken in interviews about the fact that like it is not autobiographical necessarily. It is based on certain things that she's gone through. But this is one thing I want to say about sort of the macro thing, right? Like the Ariana Grande of it all in terms of the past, you know, year or so in terms of the media narrative and stuff like that and how that gets filtered into the work. And I feel comfortable like bringing it up now because she's now made art about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say just a couple things. Let me just first say that if people are going to be like, oh, they're just being sycophantic because Bowen is friends with her, I would hope that people would think more of us than that. And also, like, if, like, you've listened to this podcast and you think that we're getting on here and, like, doing our jobs badly because we can't be subjective about this stuff, you guys, we just wouldn't bring it up at all. Like, if we didn't like the album and we didn't want to, like, hurt her feelings, we wouldn't bring it up at all. Mm-hmm. Like, first of all, do your research on it. I'll speak for myself. Like, this is so my shit. Like that, like, don't tell me I don't like this. This is my favorite fucking album of the moment. And I actually was listening to it last night again and being like, I doubt that something even touches this. But just like, I'm not lying to you on this podcast. I think that this album is like really special and specific. And yes, sure, I think it can relate to what she's gone through. But also there's obvious things about this. And she's talked about this and spoken to this. That it's like an extrapolation on these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And this album will remain special to me because I feel like it really accurately depicts that thing of when one relationship is ending and you can see in the forming of something else why it needs to end. Sometimes it feels like you have to sort through your like guilt, accountability, your regrets mm-hmm. about a certain thing in order to move through. And that's a really tough process. And I feel like all of those emotions are in this album. And so I commend her in the face of what probably had to feel like a lot of pressure. And I'm sure for some people, it will never be enough. But what I love about this album is it's not like flexing on anybody. No. It's like very... I think it's really complex and all the emotions that go with a relationship ending, a new one starting, being self-conscious about the way that it started, feeling guilty, feeling excited, feeling horny for something that's new. It's all there in a way that like I am really connecting to mm-hmm. as someone who's been in difficult relationships and emotional situations in the past. Like I'm feeling that there's a lot of truth and authenticity in this.
Yes, truth and authenticity in conjunction with like a sensitivity. I think I can say that not autobiographical as an album, but she was very, very, very purposeful about the way people would be portrayed in this and the way she would portray herself in this and how it's not a totally like, my hands are clean. It's not like she could have absolutely put out an album that was like, I'm going to preserve and protect things about my own image or wrest the narrative from someone or the media or people in these situations. I mean, I think We Can't Be Friends is not necessarily a lot. It's about her portrayal, the way the media relates to her.
I've always felt that.
Yeah.
And I almost feel like it's about her fans too.
Yeah. Like, know that you made me. I'm botching the lyrics.
But I'm still here hanging. Love that.
Wait until you love me again. Like, we can't be friends, but I like to pretend. I like to just pretend. Like, cling to your papers and pens. I'll wait for your love again. Like, she's like, we're in a tough spot right now, and I get it. Like, I didn't think you would understand me. But, like, you know, it's all these things that are incredibly fragile and I think very nuanced. And there is, I'm just thinking, this is the only thing that I'm going to not acknowledge about the situation, which is that, like, there is such a unqueer, puritanical, Christian way we are approaching marriage in the discourse. Very, like, trad wife. I'm like, this is interesting. Like, everyone's being very, like, this sanctity of marriage. Of course, it is so much more complicated than that. But at the heart of these conversations that we've had in, like, infidelity discourse with everybody, because I will also just say, like, the thing in We Can't Be Friends is, like, the narrative is wrong. The narrative is wrong, and she's not even outwardly saying that. Mm-hmm. But the narrative has been incorrect, and people have even retracted things in these stories with no fucking apology to the people who are involved.
Yeah. Yep.
I can tell you for a fact that what people out there seem to be clinging onto
is not correct.
Is incorrect.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I guess, another thing of it is it's not that people sound silly or sound dumb. It's just watching something in action when the truth is something else. And that has to be incredibly frustrating for everyone in terms of like people attacking like the sanctity of marriage or whatever. I think that people's point is that it's more than that because there was a young, a young family, et cetera, all these things. But I think that, and I'm just going to speak in terms of my personal experience here. And I'm just going to share this. Sometimes I think it feels like when you have a sort of cosmic thing happen where you fall in love in such an intense way and it almost feels like the right thing to do is to move forward with that for everyone involved. Do you know what I mean? Like if you have a situation where
it feels absolute in terms of the actionable thing, it is so consuming in a way that like can be destructive, but it cannot feel that way from within that closed system of like two people. I mean, it's like, it makes it cliche for like the man to like fuck the secretary, which is not what's happening here, but it's like, it's why this thing persists in like humanity, you know?
Yeah. I think that we love a gray area and we love like an anti-hero and we love like something that's complicated and emotional and fraught as long as it's not real. I think we want to root for Olivia Pope to fuck that president for the rest of her life. You know what I mean? Like we root for true love. Like we've, and in other senses, like, you know, fucking like we want complexity. It feels like everywhere else except what's real. Because then when something is real and we can make it about us, we can become the complex figure. But the fact is, like, everyone's a human being and, like, goes through things. And sometimes this shit is more complicated than you would think. Especially for someone who has been through, like, specific relationship trauma. Specific emotional trauma as it relates to the past, the way that she's been treated, the way that she has seen her relationships start and end. That is something that's like, it's difficult when you are public because it almost looks like a sort of like thing you can't possibly take seriously. But the fact is, like, it is not our life. You have to imagine that people are not doing things with destructive impulses. You can't imagine that anyone meets and are like, wow, you know what we're about to do? Ruin lives. Mm-hmm, like, we're about to be emblematic for something bad. No one goes out in their life and does that. What people do is they go out in their life and they engage with other people and they engage with their emotions. And sometimes things happen. And I feel like we are allowing a complexity in fictional people, but not real people. And I think it's really crazy what happens in the discourse. And I'm not saying you have to like her. I'm not saying you have to like the album. I'm not saying you have to agree with me or agree with Bowen. But what I'm saying is, like, we should probably allow for the possibility that not everything is exactly what it seems, because it feels like when we engage with entertainment that would suggest that, we're all in and we can understand it. Mm-hmm. But then when it's a headline about someone that we can be ready made to criticize and hate and project on, we lose all ability to see shades of gray in any situation. And that is what's happening here, full stop. What's great about it is we have this excellent art. And that we can have a discourse about.
Sure. She could have very easily made this a Reputation album, an album that was like, fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
I've been completely misunderstood. I will emerge from this victorious, if not like completely alienated from a whole kind of narrative that's been created out of my control. But I think instead it's this very fragile, delicate work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's her most sonically cohesive album.
Mm.
I think it has just such a specific vocabulary. Like, I really think she like came out of positions and was like, I put out my Vibes album. Let me go back to like the root of this thing for me, which is like, I was singing Mariah since I could talk, you know, mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. Let me go back to that. And I really feel comfortable talking about this. And anyone who's rolling their eyes at what I'm about to say can really go fuck off. Mm-hmm. I have understood in recent months that like a media narrative can be completely consuming and devastating and like frustrate you to no end because of how wrong it is.
Yeah.
And having your name be put in sentences along with other names as a way of like canceling anything you do out of like invalidating what you do, like pushing absolute falsehoods. I'm sorry. It is a really fucking disorienting thing to experience.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say that. And I'm sure people who listen to this have experienced this on different levels, scales bigger than mine, smaller than mine. It doesn't matter. But you must understand that there's something universal about this thing of like, oh no, you don't. You've completely misinterpreted, not even misinterpreted, just like mistaken on mm-hmm. a literal level, like what has happened to me, what I have done, what I have not done. Mm-hmm. And you can be completely vindictive about that, or you can make the choice to just move forward and make something out of it if you want, cope with it, process it. This girl knows how to process shit through her work.
Mm-hmm.
Like we've known that to be true since years and years and years ago. Like, let her cook, as we say now. You know what I mean? Leave it alone.
Yeah.
Just leave it alone. That's all.
I mean, for me too, like, it's just what's been created out of whatever she's gone through, like, in her old relationship, whatever she's experienced entering a new one, is this really cohesive story that I think that is Eternal Sunshine, which is starting with, am I in the right relationship? I don't know. I actually am positive I'm not. And for me, that's bi. But obviously I slip up and I don't want to break up again. Like, I'm still going back and forth. I just remember when my last relationship ended, there were so many times where I thought I was done. You know what I mean? There were so many times where I thought like that I was like on my boy bi shit. You know what I mean? But then you slip back and you realize like what am I doing to hurt someone? How have I been hurt? Like, do I not like this person anymore? My favorite element of the whole album, like my favorite section is We Can't Be Friends into I Wish I Hated You. Like, I had to talk about it in therapy. Like, the We Can't Be Friends music video, which really is the story of the whole album. I had to cry when I first saw it. And then I cried about it in therapy, talking about it. And then I cried about thinking about therapy later. Like, it was Pisces season down. Like, and this album is coming at a really fraught astrological time. But I have to say, like, I Wish I Hated You, like, that is really ultimately at the, and the fact that that's really the last song that's about the old relationship before she ends it, like, in a state of peace about the fact that, like, she's going to try to step forward, like, and really, like, actualize this thing that she deeply believes is the love of her life. Like, the last thing that she says is, there's no way I can justify anything other than what I will always have for you, which is just love. Like, mm-hmm. I got into this relationship with you. Oops.
Oh.
I got into this relationship with you because I love you. And that's actually never going to go away. Like, no. even if shit really goes down, like, if shit really burns down, what's going to always be true is that there was so much love there. And hopefully at the end of every relationship, like, what you can do is leave it. And you can remember what was really important was that you loved somebody and that they loved you back. And
hopefully that's always the leave behind.
Yeah. I mean, it should be. And of course, situations are ugly. And of course, shit doesn't always make sense. But I guess the last thing I'll say is that we shouldn't be demanding that people, especially artists, be perfect. Of course, like, have your opinions. Like, you know what I mean? But we're going to live in a very boring world if everyone just acts the way that you want them to. And if we can't ever learn from people and we can't ever, like, absorb people and we can't ever have, like, difficult situations reflected back to us. And this is very conflicted, I think, at times tortured, at times euphoric. Like, the work asks a lot of questions and answers some of them. Like, everything is very in process. And I hope the best for anyone that's, like, representing their relationship here or feels seen by the work here. I hope that, you know, everyone can find, like, a peace with love in their life. You know what I mean? But, like, I also know that cosmic love and those feelings, you know, they don't always pan out in the best way. And here's what you can know. If anyone's going to really pay for it, it'll be the people that took the risks. So don't you worry out there. Like, if what you really want is for people that you don't agree with to fail, like, who knows? Like, they just might. But I would hope that we're not rooting for that.
No, but, you know, if you are a big believer in karma, if you think this invites karma, which I'm here to tell you again, that your set of facts is not, I'm not going to reveal the actual facts because they're not mine to reveal, but I can say that the matrix of information that you are using to, like, draw a line to the karmic outcome you want is not existent.
Yeah. And I would say that, you know, even thinking about, like, us going back, like, 5 years, like, some people being like, oh, if this were 5 years ago, they would tear her up. You know what I mean? Or, like, whatever. Like,
I would hope that we don't talk about these things the same way we did 5 years ago, because maybe the tone has changed for the general culture consuming population. You know what I mean? Like, all of us are kind of evaluating things differently. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. If you get the ick from thinking that we are, like, defending these people that, like, most of whom we don't really have that much of a connection with anyway.
Yeah.
Then fine. I'm here to tell you, like, would you be putting your friends, your coworkers on blast? Absolutely not.
Yeah. Shut the fuck up.
And it's not a transactional thing. It's not that, like, this is a muzzle, but, like, I'm just going to say this is someone who has been, like, a true friend to me.
And has shown me love.
She has shown me, like, whatever. Not that buys you, like,
Yeah, but two things can be true. I believe that every single fucking thing we just said is true. And I also believe that you're goddamn right if something went down, especially during that time when you were not having an easy time. I knew that you had someone that was like really looking out for you and really riding hard for you and like really being there for you. And I will be fucking grateful to that person forever, because there's nothing I care about more than you. And the fact that someone had your back. Yeah. So what? We are going to fucking have that person's back.
Anyway, that's the album. I love it.
I love that. And also, like, not for nothing, but it will be so identifiable with a moment. And she should feel so proud of herself. I said, you know who's definitely proud of her for this? Fucking Mariah. Mariah would have made this album if she was Ariana's age. And, like, if this was, like, that moment in time for her. This album reminds me in many ways of Butterfly. It reminds me of, like, you know... It reminds me of like a new era Mariah, because I do believe this is new era Ari. Like, she talks about how, you know, it's equal parts Mariah and Imogen Heap. I think that is so executed so well. And I don't know. What I care about ultimately is that fucking art is good and interesting and makes people think and makes people feel. This is all those things to me. Well fucking done. I mean, like, this is definitely going to be one of my favorite albums of the year, and I will listen to it forever. And I fucking love Positions. I love when Ariana Grande is like, yeah, yeah, my pussy is a strawberry. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I love Pussy is a Strawberry.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I love I'm Rich. Love it. And like, but like, it would have been so easy for her too to just do an album of that and sidestep this whole thing and be like, it's me, Ari, yeah, yeah. But like, she didn't. There's not on this.
I'm Elia Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow. Thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex and then he's very vulnerable so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay. What else is there in the culture that you want to talk about?
I thought they were like one of the best Oscars I'd seen in a while. Like,
I thought they were delightful. It wasn't like an amazing show for me personally. Although I think the
wins it never is.
It never is. The wins were very satisfying up until I would say the end, maybe, but not like all of them at the end. But I will say, I mean, the Boy and the Heron winning, Poor Things winning the technical Oscars. I was like, okay, like this is, there's an even spread here. I am like, oh, kind of a bummer that the only two shutouts within Best Picture were Killers of the Flower Moon and Maestro. Not a bummer, but it's like, it would have been, it kind of would have been like a great thing if like all 10 movies had gotten some flowers. That's all.
Yeah. I think that like, ultimately, the Oppenheimer of it all is kind of lol, because I feel like, at least I can speak for myself, I went out of my way to see everything. I did end up seeing Killers. I did end up seeing
Zone of Interest.
Zone, which was hard, but I 100% agree with it winning what it won. I think the best sound win is a really inspired choice, because sound is so crucial to the success and the how hard that movie hits. But it beating Oppenheimer was obviously a surprise. But I guess the big note there is, in terms of sound, one thing we need to be able to hear is the dialogue.
Oh.
So that would be, I guess, my thing about Oppenheimer, which I respect its win. I understand and respect that people feel that that's by far the best movie of the year. I do disagree. And I say this as a Christopher Nolan fucking super fan. I am Dark Knight Hive. I love Inception. You can catch me weeping to Interstellar. Like, Interstellar, you know what I mean? Like, I love Christopher Nolan. I just think this one was tough because of the length. And I do think the sound mixing is an issue. But, you know, it did run away with pretty much everything. What I liked was, I love Poor Things. Like, I feel like when it started to win earlier in the night, I was like, oh, maybe this like two horse race isn't really going Lily Gladstone's way. And just to speak to the Lily Gladstone and Emma Stone of it all, that could have gone either way. It would have been an incredible moment had Lily Gladstone won the Oscar. But if you haven't seen Poor Things, then you should. And I wish that people wouldn't take Lily Gladstone's Oscar loss out on Emma Stone, because that is so unfair. And that is, of course, the way the discourse has gone, because as we've just said, the discourse is toxic and decides it has to be one thing. And it's so black and white. There has to be heroes and villains. So Lily Gladstone has to be a hero here, and Emma Stone has to be a villain here because she's won the Oscar, when Emma Stone is fucking talented as shit. What she decides to do with her movie stardom is like produce things like Poor Things, which is thought-provoking and radical and feminist and really cool. And like
Problemista.
She's producing Problemista. Like, please miss me with like, she's emblematic with racism and like some sort of like bigger thing than it is. Like, do not take it out on her. If you're disappointed for Lily, that's fine. Her career is forever changed. She's now an Oscar-nominated actor. She's the most famous person coming out of that conversation because everyone's rooting for her and wanting her next thing. Her career will be fine. Like, it doesn't have to be fuck Emma Stone.
There's also this other thing going on where everyone's like, well, she should have done supporting. Well, Lily should have done supporting and then she would have won. It's this weird kind of postmortem. But Kyle Buchanan was saying this. It's like, no, by campaigning herself for lead, she's telling Hollywood, I am a leading
take me seriously.
Actress. Take me seriously. Absolutely. She should have no regrets. No one should believe that she should have done things any differently. She pulled off a flawless campaign, start to finish, not a single misstep. And yes, it's frustrating that she did not take home the trophy, but she is coming out of this a full winner. She is moving forward with complete power and grace and everything that she deserves.
I'm super excited for her. I mean, I saw she's the lead of that Hulu show. That looks really good. She won the SAG Award. She's won a Golden Globe. Like, and now sometimes I think like that helps propel a narrative. You know what I mean? Like, Emma Stone wins this Oscar. By the way, no one looked more mortified than Emma Stone. Like, that reaction shot of her winning that Oscar, you could tell she didn't want it like this. You know what I mean? But also, it's like last year with the Cate Blanchett and Michelle Yeoh of it all. You get a sense that Cate Blanchett started like campaigning for Michelle Yeoh because she could feel this heat breathing on her neck of like, if you win, fuck you, the person you'll have taken it from. It's like,
right.
It shouldn't be about that. What's important is the art. What's important is that last year, the Michelle Yeoh and Cate Blanchett year, we had two towering performances that were so different, that were given by people that are the best in their fields. And yes, the Oscar was won by Michelle Yeoh. It felt incredible. It was so deserved. It was what I was rooting for. But what's really important is the art that they created. What's important is that we created the character of Evelyn. What's important is that we created the character of Lydia Tarr. And by we, of course, I mean them.
Yeah.
That's ultimately what's important. And this Oscars thing, this like winning, losing narrative is like, it doesn't mean that person is a loser. It just means that like one of them won an Oscar.
Like, now we know the story of Molly and we know Bella Baxter is this like really fun Yorgos character. Like, there is like an Osage narrative that is like a Scorsese directed film.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you think about it, I don't know, not that we're like revolutionizing the way to think about this or to like talk to like have the discourse, but it's like, if I frame it in that way, it's like, it's incredible that like this was the Oscars race. And like,
yeah,
it's a weird, yeah. I mean, someone did a super cut of like Emma's reaction shot to the win and then like cutting to like screenshots of the discourse and whatever. Like, it's just,
I did see that.
The spectator sport of it is like a little gratuitous in a way that's fun. And like, that's why we love award season, but it just feels like it gets longer and longer every year. And by extension, a little bit more exhausting and draining, so that by the time it's past Sunday, I'm like, I don't really want to think about these movies ever again. Is that bad?
Yeah, no, 100%. And I feel like the season is very long because it feels like it starts in September and goes to March. To the point where like Oscar season, like, give me a break. Like, this is just what it is. I'll tell you what I loved. And I'm clapping for the writer's branch because we picked two great movies to win these screenplay awards.
And this is, wins.
These are the categories that I like always am nail biting about because I just always want like the right script to be solidified with this Oscar win.
You are a writer down. I love that.
I would say Anatomy of a Fall. That was one of my favorite movies of the year. They tore that script up, like, incredible. And then American Fiction, I absolutely loved. It was so great. And Cord Jefferson, I just want to shout out because
that speech was incredible.
What he used his time to say was so worth it. And it was so meaningful and it was so true. And you could feel everyone being like, yes, that is exactly right. Like, instead of a $200 million budgeted movie that may or may not fail, and then we all have to pay for that, like, in terms of, like, you know, the fact that we don't have the opportunity to see smaller budgeted things because all the budget went to that one thing that may or may not be good, because those are the movies that are more likely to be put together by committee artistically in a way, like, on an executive level. Like, we're just, the soul of the film industry is like dying and more and more every single year. And it's because we are not investing in more talent and like ideas that are like
interesting,
actually interesting. He said, make tons of smaller budget movies and invest in more stories and more talent than this one big budgeted movie. And I really do believe that's the way too. I couldn't agree with him more. And there he is holding an Oscar on stage for one of those modestly budgeted movies. And so he's in a position of power to speak to that. And yes, I'm really grateful that he did. And I really respect him.
He's speaking as a writer and a director. It's like incredible. I mean, that the impact of that. Sorry to Frances McDormand, but I mean, inclusion writer, has that impacted at all? I hope. I want to say it has, but I have not seen that be the norm. And that's not a ding on Frances.
No.
But I think this could actually, hopefully, like, have some impact. I think, like, everyone was watching. I really, and like, we were cheering. I was watching with House and Whitaker and Tom, and we were all just cheering.
Whitaker is friends with Cord Jefferson.
Yeah.
I believe they work together.
they worked together. And then Whitaker showed us a photo of them watching the Oscars together like 5 years ago, just like hanging out. I was just like, what a beautiful.
He seems like such a great guy. And it feels like he's very beloved. And I mean, if you haven't seen American Fiction, you should definitely check it out. I mean, like, it's really smart. It's like brand new.
And check out The Good Place on Peacock.
Yeah, you got to check out The Good Place on Peacock. It's really smart. It's brand new.
I do miss The Good Place.
The Good Place was great.
I love The Good Place.
Good Place was a lot of fun. Can you believe they gave Messi the dog from Anatomy of a Fall a seat at the Oscars? Messi had a full seat.
Messi had a full seat, but everyone was very up in arms about the puppet, the applause pre-tape.
Mm-hmm.
They shot that beforehand, which, you know, like, it's a... As well-trained as Messi is, as much of a professional and an amazing actor as he is, you can't tell him and communicate these things. You can't, like, explain that this is an award show and you're here because you did a great job.
Messi is capable of so much, including performing an overdose in Anatomy of a Fall. I don't know, bitch. I think they could have taught the dog to clap in real time. I agree. I'm with the mob on this one.
Oh, gosh. Did you see the shot of Messi at the end of the broadcast of Messi, like, raising his leg up to pee on Matt Damon's Hollywood Walk of Fame star?
I didn't see that, but I love it.
Little Jimmy Kimmel joke.
Little Jimmy joke. I thought Jimmy Kimmel was great. I thought that it was really fun. Also, shout out Louis Fertel. He wrote for the Oscars. He did a lot of the monologue. I know that was his lifelong dream. So I just want to say congratulations to that fucking bitch. I wanted to say one of my favorite things about any award show is when Billie Eilish is there.
She's so good.
I fucking love her. She's so fucking good.
She's so fun.
I just love watching her perform. I love that song so much.
I'm so glad it won.
I'm so happy it got everything it deserved. You know, it's the first song since My Heart Will Go On to win Song of the Year at the Grammys and the Oscar for Best Original Song.
Culturally, it has that impact. You know what I mean? Like, like not since Shallow. Like, Whitaker was saying this. Like, it seems like every 5 years or so, Best Original Song feels like the category of the night.
Yeah. And it's really because we're honoring a cultural moment, which I feel like keeps that category alive in a way.
Totally. But like the gaps in between those years feel like conciliatory almost. I mean, so literally 5 years ago was Shallow, you know, and it was just like, oh my God, this was what a moment, you know, like,
I know.
I think and we kept calling it the shallow shot, which was like shooting with the audience in frame, like from behind or whatever.
That's so funny. Shot. Oh, man. Yeah.
And shout out to Becky G.
Shout out to Becky G.
That cutaway to Diane and Eva Longoria. I mean,
Did you hear about this controversy? Like, apparently Diane Warren flipped a shit when Cynthia and Ariana were announcing Best Original Song because Cynthia was like, tonight we've seen nominees for Best Original Song. And Ariana goes, and the Oscar goes too, and just opened the envelope. Whether or not she was supposed to say the nominees first is in dispute, but Diane Warren apparently started screaming and was running around furious because Ariana hadn't like said the nominees, which means that Diane Warren didn't get her like name read out. This is the rumor that's happening. And apparently Eva Longoria saw Diane start to spin out and she went to the bar.
She was like, I'm not handling this.
She was like, I am not dealing with this.
She was like, I thought I was going to be off the fucking clock.
She goes, bitch, I got the fire inside. I am out of here.
Bitch, this is Endgame. I directed this movie. I am I'm just happy and grateful that I got the Oscar nom.
Yeah.
Miss me with that, Diane. We love Diane, though.
We love Diane. I mean, say don't go. First, her most famous song. The woman wrote Because You Love Me. But like, I don't know. At the moment, I was like, oh, is she opening that envelope a little early? But then now I'm kind of happy because I do love that there was drama.
Ari and Al Pacino not naming the nominees. I think that was just like a programming note, a production note.
I thought
note,
it had like, to be.
As like, let's keep it moving. Because the songs were shortened too. The songs were very abbreviated, I thought. Except for I'm Just Ken and What Was I Made For? Which, you know, I guess...
I'm Just Ken was so good.
Oh my God, that was incredible.
I loved that. He was great. Like,
so
I just thought
good.
He got it. And also, like, to be that relaxed and singing live on the Oscars, like, that's really cool shit. I mean, especially for someone who we know, you know, people who know he is a singer, but like, not really known for being like some live singer. Like,
yeah.
It was really good. The whole thing, you could tell it was like a very joyous performance. I loved that they gave Barbie as much real estate on the show as they did, even though it only won the one award, because it was one of the stories of the year, obviously.
Absolutely. And back to Billy, like it was just that first shot of Ryan in the audience. Like Billy is cracking up, cutting up. I'm like,
yeah.
I was like, oh, this is the right vibe. Like the Barbie, that whole Barbie group is like so, it feels like such good vibes. Everyone's just like really, really, I don't know, like very like basking in like this journey that they've all been on, which ended that night, you know? Like,
yeah.
Margot fucking looked stunning. Greta looked amazing. Yeah, all of it.
America snatched.
I did have one moment of just like, oh, right. I was supposed to be.
You were supposed to be in that.
And that's all I'll like acknowledge about it. But I was just like, oh, my God.
And then you cut to you at home, like staring at the space. One of the fun moments of the show was Rita Moreno presenting America Ferreira.
America.
I loved that. I thought it was great. I love the Fab Five coming out and doing the speeches.
I love that.
I will say, if I have one thing, it was Charlize really flopped hers. Like, I've never been stung by a jellyfish. Cut to Annette Bening like, oh, this is what we're doing. Like, I think Charlize was trying to give it like a gravitas that like was not placed correctly. Like, it was obviously a joke. Like, if you have to lean on it a little bit, but she tried to play this like middle ground or like underplay it. Like, you can't underplay I've never been stung by a jellyfish, but watching you, Annette Bening, I felt like I had. You can't, that there's nothing.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing emotional about that.
There's like there's no grip there. There's no purchase.
Like, lean on it a little bit, Charlize. Like, we have to understand that it's a joke. Cause then at the end, it was just so funny because Annette Bening's sitting there. She's already pissed she had to get a dress for this. She was like, so she didn't. but like, she's sitting there. And then at the end of that thing, the Charlie's speech, she kind of goes like, eh. You could see her kind of like tilt her head and be like, eh.
Annette Bening, what a perfect model for award show behavior, was like, fuck this. I'm wearing a Mother of the Bride garment. I don't give a fuck. I'm going to wear my fucking tinted glasses.
And were chic.
Those were chic. Her most animated moment all night was Kimmel at the end doing like the Trump jail time joke.
Thing,
Patrick and I were laughing because she was like,
Annette.
To her, she was so tickled by it.
Annette was down for that Trump drag. Yeah, she was really down for it. Patrick also, House was like...
No, Patrick was rooting for Annette the whole night.
I mean, yeah, he was Annette's hive. And honestly, I loved Annette Bening and Nyad. I talked about it a couple weeks ago. Like, it was so good. But what else? Oh, love Devine's speech.
Oh, beautiful.
Like, that was so great. Like, Robert Downey Jr., I thought we front-loaded our speeches this season. Like, it's hard when you keep seeing the same person go up again, because by the time Oscar night comes around, it feels like anointed in a way, and the speeches feel less, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like one of the only people that really worked all the way up to giving her best speech was Devine. And then, you know, not everyone else nailed the speeches, but...
Hey.
But hey.
That's Hollywood.
That's Hollywood, baby. Not everyone nails the speeches.
Not everyone nails the speeches.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow, thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Did you see Dune yet? Speaking of Hollywood,
I have not seen Dune. I'm going to this week, but I can't wait to see Timmy ride that worm. I can't wait for the ghost of Oscar Isaac, I guess.
He's not in it.
Oh, he's in the credits. He's credited in Dune too. I like looked it up. I was like, did they credit Oscar Isaac? I know Momoa's not credited because of what happens, but for some reason, Oscar, maybe I looked at the wrong thing, but I could have sworn that Oscar Isaac was listed as a starring actor in Dune 2. And I was like, oh, I guess they like do a flashback or something. I don't know.
Momoa?
Momoa is not credited in Dune 2.
He's not in it.
Right. But I'm saying, did I say Oscar Isaac?
Yeah.
But Oscar Isaac is credited in Dune 2, I believe.
He
and
is?
He's not in it either.
Because he's not in the movie. But why would Momoa, he's not in this.
He was in the first one.
He was?
Yes.
Jason Momoa?
Jason Momoa.
Aquaman?
Shaved Jason Momoa. But I think he looks hotter without the beard. Sorry, Jason.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I didn't even remember that. Okay, so the thing about Dunes is I definitely go see them, but I am miserable almost every second while I'm watching them. And then the second I leave, I can't stop thinking
about
them.
I loved that.
Like, but while it's
because
happening,
I think it's because you feel sand. You feel the sand if you're
I
watching.
I don't like to be sandy. People know that. Like, and I'm always worried about people's ocular health, like because of all the dust and all the sand and also the context they have to keep putting in their eyes. I'm just so concerned about Timmy and Zendaya and sort of their eyes.
Things in their nostrils.
And Javier as well. I will say my favorite part of these movies is Rebecca Ferguson.
Amazing.
Protect her at all costs. Lady Jessica is that girl. The performance that she gives in this and the first one I thought were great. Like, this is the kind of thing I would like to see a nomination for. Like, so, so, so good. She's so, like, it's like this mixture of unbothered and completely physically tortured, which makes me laugh and it gives me a thrill. Loved her talking to her baby, Anya Taylor-Joy, and then loved the one scene with Anya Taylor-Joy. I hope she got paid $100,000 for it being a day player.
At least.
I was like, literally, it's all I could think about. I saw it with Abe Schwartz and I was like, I left and I was like, how much do you think they paid Anya?
I think the root of Rebecca Ferguson is unbothered. I think that you see her in an interview, she's like, oh, what is this? I don't give a fuck. But it's so charming.
I love her. I think we need to give her way more. She is actually top 1% of the talent in Hollywood. It's her. But I was looking at her IMDb because I was, of course, trying to track down
Which the journey from The Greatest Showman to Dune.
I was like, no, well, that obviously, but she was out. She made news because she said, like, I'm going to tell you something. There was an actor years ago, total asshole, and he was mean to me on set. And I never forgot it. And
who
like, you know what I mean?
Who do you think it is?
Well, I have my opinions, but I...
Oh. You're protecting celebrities again.
No, fine. I'll just say, I think looking at it, it's either Michael Fassbender or Jake Gyllenhaal. And then I watched interviews with both of them because this is how on the case I was. And it seemed like, at least in terms of the press presentation, that she had good relationships with both of them. So what I'll say about Rebecca Ferguson and all this is... she was incredibly honest in that last interview, and she's also incredibly good at press because you cannot tell which person it is that was cruel to her on set to the point where she was like, I refuse to work with you today. You know, but that is what she has said. So much smoke and mirrors out there. Should we talk about the royal family? Because this is eating my ass up.
I was going to say, Rebecca is one of our great Brits. Mm-hmm. And to go to some ungreat Brits, let's talk about this whole fucking thing.
Let's fucking go.
So that is the craziest photo I've ever seen in my life.
I can't believe they thought that was going to fly. It's completely unhinged. Either these are the dumbest people in the world or they think we're the dumbest people in the world. And maybe it's both.
I think it's both. That window on the left, I'm not even looking at it. I can just all of it is so what's the word? Eerie, like really disturbing. So disturbing, this photo.
They are eerie and disturbing people. So for those of you who don't know, like Kate Middleton has been
missing. I think everyone knows at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure everyone knows, but Kate Middleton's been missing. And they released this photo of her that was so clearly like either AI or Photoshop or something that was just like, me and my children together definitely today. And everyone was like, that's obviously fake. What the fuck? And then they announced, I think she made a statement taking credit for that and was like, I'm so sorry, that was me.
I'm an amateur photographer. I dabble in Photoshop.
First of all, mama, Kate Middleton, you were not on Photoshop putting this photo together. Like, no way. No way.
You barely know how to use a computer.
I can't believe the lengths they are going to cover up what is going on, which, by the way, the cat's out of the bag, because did you see that clip from Big Brother UK?
No, tell me.
Bowen. Fucking Ekin Sue is now on Big Brother UK with, I guess, like a relative of Kate Middleton. And so in the Big Brother house, Ekin Sue asked, and this is, you can see a video of this because it's the Big Brother house. She goes, I have to ask you, like, where is Kate? And her cousin or something, or her uncle or something, sighs and goes, you know, they've asked me not to talk about it, but just she's getting the best care. He literally says those words. Is she okay? And he was just like, you know, I'm in contact with her mother. I'm not really supposed to talk about it, but like they're doing like what they can.
I can't believe Ekin Sue is
fucking Ekin Sue was the one.
Oh my God.
So, I had to laugh because I was like, wow, it's all converging in a way that's so crazy. But what's obviously happening is she's ill, she's not well, and for some reason they feel the need to cover that up or not tell the truth about this, to the fact that they would now outwardly lie and misrepresent things. They gotta go. They can't be trusted.
They can't be trusted. This is the ghost of Diana just like fucking up every single lane of this family to me. Like, there is no, like, good royal right now. I'm sorry. Or ex-royal, for that matter.
Not one.
You can't root for these people.
No, it's so crazy. And
there never was. Not to say that there ever was. I'm sorry. I keep going. Except Diana.
Yeah. Well, I think that this is way worse than they think. Like,
of course.
I think this is, like, maybe even the straw that breaks the camel's back. Because even people that, like, didn't care about the treatment of Diana and didn't care about the treatment of Meghan, like, have an issue with this because
with being
like,
lied to this way.
Yeah. And it's just like, what would be the big deal about being transparent and honest about what she's going through? You know, what is, if she's very ill, like tell people that, like, what would be the big deal?
The imagery of the royal family right now is that it's like falling apart because of Charles. And I mean, it's all pretty bleak and dark, but it's like, they can't afford to look any weaker than they already are. than they already do.
I think it's a total miscalculation on their part. And I think they obviously have the worst PR in the world. But I think when they've been the most powerful and when they've been the most beloved is when they appear the most human. You know what I mean? Like Elizabeth coming out and greeting the mourners, like William and Harry, like when Diana passed away, like them being so obviously in a state of grief and mourning and the country could be there for them and rally around them. Like, you know, even Harry and Meghan leaving, like that's a very like human thing in terms of like, I just feel like they need to understand, like it is through humanity and it is again through complexity and gray area that we all can truly connect. And I feel like they're trying to withhold this image that is now like, we know, completely constructed because it's starting to fall apart in front of our very eyes. And I'm like, what is this all for? What is this all for?
It's to preserve meaning in like this thing that has had meaning for, like, I mean, like, this is not to totally like discount the royal family and like what its value is in like British culture and world culture. It's like the value of the monarchy is to like give people a sense of like, oh, like let's fixate on these people for all these reasons. And like now that the fixation is grim and dark and like has like a mortal element to it, it's a little sad. I think like people in the UK would, and across the world would like freak out a little bit, I think. But it's not that they already aren't. It's just that like the smoke and mirrors of it is a way to keep people like somewhat sane. And yet it's having the opposite effect.
I just think if she's really ill, I hope that everything's okay. But what they're telegraphing now is that everything is not okay.
No,
and now people are going to be panicking. Now people are going to be like, even if they are to come out in a couple weeks or whatever and say what the truth is, like, who's to say that that can even be trusted?
Right. Oh, no.
Like, at this point, they have completely lost everyone. Not everyone, but, like, the majority.
I think most people.
Yeah.
Anyway. Listen, speaking of Ekin-Su, I just really want to debrief on the traitors.
Yeah, we have to. I have it on my little list.
I mean, that finale was eventful. It wasn't uneventful. You can't say it, nothing happened.
Yeah.
I do think it was just such an empty finish. It was scoundrel behavior from Trishel. I'm just going to put it on Trishel, honestly. And CT, I guess if they both went in, because they both made that pact with each other. I am a little thrown by CT voting for Trishel.
Trishel voting for CT?
Trishel voting for CT, yes, yes, yes. But like the way they iced out MJ was just so fucking crazy to me. And it was so self. It's just like, oh, you couldn't have done a three-way split just on a math level, on like a greed level? Is that what that was?
I mean, yeah, it's a game.
Totally.
I think what they did is above board.
Okay, well,
we're going to disagree.
Agree to disagree. I didn't watch the reunion, although someone did say, like, for people who don't watch Bravo, like, you have to understand how embarrassing it is for Trishel to sit that far away from the center.
In terms of the gameplay, ultimately, she was the only person who deserved the money. Like,
sure.
her and CT, because MJ got to the end literally wrong every single time. I mean, she was literally a definition of a goat. So I understand being with her at the end and being like, I don't want to share the money with her. I mean, that's happened before. Like, and it is a game. Like, yes, maybe they were the faithfuls the whole time. And so you don't want to backstab a faithful, but it's also like you are there to win the money. So as a game move, I would have respected it. Had they gone in and been like, you and I are going to split the money like we said we were, let's get her out of here. Because ultimately, she also could be a traitor. I do believe that Trishel had reason to believe that CT could have been a traitor. And so when she voted for him, I was shocked. And then she talked it through afterwards. I was watching an interview with her afterwards and she talked it through. And I was like, oh, yeah, there were definitely times where his willingness to allow her to get a shield, she read that as like, oh, he doesn't feel like he needs one. He's a traitor. Mm-hmm. Like there were moments where I was just like, I get that reasoning. So I would have understood it either way. You know,
yeah.
I think it's a little bit of a bummer that Kate kind of stopped trying at the end.
But that's Kate down. Like she is someone who disengages like that.
Yeah.
As we saw last season.
You kind of got to love her. Like, but being in the top four when there literally had to be a traitor there because Sheree had been murdered And her being like, I believe that everyone here is a faithful. It's like, mama, you just gave it away. Like, you, and but then it's like, I don't know. Did she throw it because she came in halfway through and said, I don't really deserve this. Like, let's let them have the money and duke it out. Like, I can see that. But yeah, obviously, anytime anyone is in any of these games, I want to see them try to win all the money. That's just what I think is, that's gameplay.
I understand. It's gameplay, but it is so funny. Like, Trishel was framing these the entire game as like an absolutely moral kind of like crusade where it was like, the traitors are murdering us. We have to get like... I kind of took it as that. I was like, she's taking this serious. Like, and I understand the shift to like pure gameplay towards the end, but it was like a, oh, I don't know. I just don't like her. That's all. She's like Giselle levels to me. I'm like, I can just tell.
Giselle and Trishel are not your girls. Anyone that ends with an L, except Chrishell. Chrishell, we love you, Chrishell. You're a legend.
We love you, Chrishell. No, if Trishel shows up to an Upfront event, not that I get invited to them anyway, but I'm just like, no.
It's always like the Upfront is always where Bowen is expecting to have to throw hands.
Yes, I'm going to do it. Sorry, Donna Langley.
I feel like, yeah, I mean, it was a fun season.
It was a fun season. I'm sorry, I don't think so, honey. Dan and Peter, like, just people who kind of, like, killed the vibe of the whole thing. Dan by, like, killing the sort of, like, making it impossible for the traitors to win, and then Peter for just being so smug and making the faithfuls impossible to root for. That's it.
Yeah, that's a really good distillation of what it was. I guess, like, I just wish that people could get all on the same page about, like, the fact that it's a game, okay, and you gotta do what you gotta do to win the game. Like, and I feel like in Australia...
Uh-huh.
Not in the UK. In the UK, they were very emotional all over the place. But in Australia, it was clear that everyone was there for the money, which is why you're there. Like, and so anytime like some emotion like comes into it, or whenever anyone's like, I have to think, should I vote with my head or my heart? I'm like screaming at the TV, your head.
Your head.
Vote with your head.
But the thing about this season of The Traitors, which I thought was interesting to see play out, was like, if it is all reality TV veterans, there are so many other factors that go into it where it's like, it's not like a full normie season where it's like, they don't know each other. They don't know each other from Adam. They don't know what their strategies or what their reputations are. Like, this was a season of The Traitors where it was like, oh, did it work? And I think it did, but did it work if everyone knows, has all these preconceived notions going in? That's all.
Yes, definitely. That's one. I think it, whatever it is, it just has to be on an even playing field. And season three, it is going to be reality stars again. Like, that's
yes.
Confirmed. But what I like about an all normies cast, like an Australia cast, is you really believe they need the money. Uh-huh. And so, for example, like on Australia, it's one woman being like, yeah, probably with the money, I'll get a new hand. It's like, that's different than Kate Chastain.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, probably with the money, I'll get a blowout every week for the rest of my life. You know what I mean? It's like, I would rather...
I don't think she cares about her hair.
No, that's right. I said in every scene, Kate looks like she's hanging upside down. It's wild.
Her hair is
chaotic as shit in every scene. It's like the hairstylist was like, for you, we're going to go static. I'm just going to rub my feet on a carpet, honey, and then we're going to get you electrocuted as fuck. Like, her hair looks fucked.
Freshly fucked, freshly electrocuted.
It is fuzzy. But that's the one thing I like about Australia, and I have to say, watch this season.
I'm going
to
do it.
Because it is so good, and you just... get that there's a desperation for the money there that informs the gameplay and makes it even more cutthroat. Like, I don't know. My thing is, I just want to see the game played well. Of course, it's fun to have like the fun elements of like, you know, the reality show aspect, like, oh Lord, not Ekansu. No one likes you, Parvati. I don't have to kiss your ass for a rose. Like, that's all fun. But it was very funny at the reunion. And if you watch the reunion, you'll see like the housewives treating it like a housewives reunion.
Yes,
and the gamers being like, you guys, it's a game.
But I kind of love seeing that sort of mingling.
Oh, it's so funny. The collision is so funny. Also, it was such like fan service wish fulfillment for me to see Parvati sitting next to Andy Cohen in a reunion. Like,
I know, that's a cool image. God, it's so good. I started the episode and I was like, and I'm sorry to be superficial, but Parvati looked amazing.
She looked great.
She looked stunning.
I mean, look, if it's going to be a reunion, like, let's turn the reunion.
And also Peppermint had a, I'm glad they gave Peppermint a moment to be like, me being on the show was incredibly meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so disappointing that I went out so early.
Yeah.
Fucking Trishelle, man. I fucking hate her.
It seems like they are okay. You know what I would say? Yeah, like, that's my thing. It's like Peppermint and Trishelle seem okay. Peppermint applauded for Trishelle when they talked about how she was the winner. They still follow each other on Instagram. Like,
but I also wouldn't mind if I never had to think about Trishelle ever again.
And that is your right. And guess what? Maybe now that she's won the money, maybe she'll retire.
I don't know.
Speaking of a human being with contradictions, I do just want to touch on the Madonna concert.
Oh, yes, please.
This was so fun. I had a great time. I'm so happy I went. It was a very comprehensive show. You got everything. She was playing the hits. And also there were some swerves. Highlights for me, Crazy for You. I mean, I just love that song so much. Like,
love that song.
Love Hung Up. Just the Vogue section was fucking great. Ali Wong came out at my show.
Oh, that's fun.
And I will also say the highlight, and I would think that this maybe is the highlight of, like, for many people, for our entire tour. I was at the show where Kylie Minogue came out. And it was such a moment to see Kylie and Madonna on stage together. And they sang an acoustic version of I Will Survive. And then Madonna led everyone in an a cappella Can't Get You Out of My Head, like, chorus.
Oh, my God.
There was so much love and respect between them, genuinely.
Yes.
And that was so amazing to see. Like, and it felt like all artifice dropped away for a second.
Yeah.
And Kylie came out and Madonna pointed at her and she was like, this is a real survivor. And I feel like only they can really understand, like, the positions that they're in.
Oh,
and obviously,
absolutely,
like, women at that level. But to see them stand together and, you know, Kylie was wearing her shirt that said Madonna, that called back to when Madonna wore that shirt that said Kylie Minogue. And it just was a joyful, faggy moment.
I love it. These are two very important people.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, yeah, like, there needs to be some sort of documentary, some sort of journalistic thing on those two, on their careers, like, side by side, because they really were like two sides of the same coin for a while, like coming up around the same time, representing different things, kind of converging, then diverging, converging. But then, I mean, in the end, it all converges back once again. And it's like, these are just two fucking legends. And to see them kind of join together in celebration is really, really beautiful. I mean, God, I do have regrets about not going to see her, Madonna, when she was in New York. But that is a very special.
Was she at Barclays?
She was at Barclays and she did MSG. And I missed both.
Oh, wow.
I was very, very sad. But
yeah, this, you know, was at the Forum.
Oh, great.
And she's been, done so many shows. I really feel I went to the right one, though.
You definitely did.
And the fact that we got Kylie Minogue, like, oh, Cardi B came out and did the Vogue section last night. And apparently it was a blast. Like Tony Gomez was saying, it was so fun.
Oh, fun.
But I wanted to say one other thing about Madonna, which is at the top of the concert, she was, you know, it was like after the first couple songs and she was addressing the audience. And so many times she was like, you guys need to put your fucking phones away. Get up on your feet. She was like talking to the audience like we were her servants and we loved it. But at one point she goes, you know, I've been in this business for 40 fucking years. I've been doing this for 40 fucking years. And today, just like the first day, I give zero fucks. And then everyone's like, woo. And then like a beat goes by and she goes, well, sometimes I give like 1.5 fucks. And I was like, thank God, you know, like, because it just goes to show that, like, even Madonna, someone who got to where she's got by being like, you know, no holds barred, confident, doing what she wants to do, like to see that she exposed in that moment the complexity and the humanity of like, I am Madonna. And that comes with so fucking much. Talk about someone who's been dissected, hated, beloved, cast aside, said like she was over, said she was the greatest thing in the world, the highs, the lows, everything. From Madonna at the end of it to expose about herself, like, you know, I know my image is like, bitch, I'm Madonna. And she in that moment was like, sometimes I give like 1.5 fuck. Because of course, like when you get to that point, like there's so much responsibility and you mean so much more than you can even possibly fathom. You are such a fully realized figure in the minds, at least. There's a perception that you are a fully fleshed figure of everyone in the world because you are Madonna. And to see her expose that she actually does care sometimes about, like, maybe what goes down, what people might think, like what's being said, I thought was like very full circle. And I also felt like was empowering almost to see her be up there and not like lie or hide behind some facade of like, I'm a bulletproof bitch. Like to see that like soft core, I was like really appreciative of that. And from that moment forward, I was able to enjoy the concert even more because this is someone who's like showing this arsenal of hits and this entire career, this story. And at the end of it all, like she exposed that humanity and I was able to really appreciate her triumphs even more.
Well, let that be like proof positive that you can be 65 years old and be celebrating your entire body of work with people who love you in that space and still acknowledge the idea that like, it's the human condition just to like care, to like be vain sometimes, which is not necessarily like what is universal, but it's like, you are like, there is no escaping that. You cannot like, you have to kill such a crazy deep part of yourself in order to not care. In order to like just let the work speak for itself and let that be the only thing and let that be the thing that you rest all of your value on. It will never be that. Even if you're fucking Madonna, your 40 years of work will not be the thing that like saves you or inoculates you from feeling like insecure or inadequate or like you're not with it in whatever way. And it's fine. It's like anytime we feel like, God, shouldn't I have grown past this? Like, shouldn't I have outgrown this part of my life? Like, you never will. That's okay. That's scary, but it's like, it's just how our brains are wired. It's how, like, we have not evolved past that on a sort of like cerebral level, you know?
It's not natural to be Madonna and have worldwide international influence and discourse about you. That's not natural. So to hear her say, I give 1.5 fuck. That was to me kind of revolutionary to hear from her.
I like the grammatical sort of like itch of like not plural fucks, right? Give 1.5 fuck.
1.5. Yeah.
And singular fuck, which doesn't grammatically totally make sense.
Title of ep, 1.5 fuck.
I love it.
That is a really good title of ep, actually.
Yes.
That's a very good title of ep.
I'm Elia Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have like one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune into what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations solutions that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We've tackled everything in the culture. Should we do I Don't Think So, Honey?
I think so. This is I Don't Think So, Honey. This is where we take 1 minute to go off against something in culture, go off on something in culture. Matt, do you have something?
I do. And before I do this, this has nothing to do. Actually, it kind of has something to do with it. But I did want to say one other thing, which is I went to that Elton John Oscar party.
Oh, my God.
And I saw Sutton Strack. And to see Sutton Strack at the Elton John party when that had been a like plotline on the show.
A huge, yes.
Was LOL to me. And I will say the highlight of my night was when I was standing at the bar trying to get a drink. And I look over and there's Kesha. And we were all waiting for drinks and the bartenders were doing an incredible job, but like it can never be fast enough.
No,
Kesha, as a joke, like grabbed a bottle of champagne off the bar and like pretended like she was going to take it. And I turned to her and I said, that was the most Kesha shit I've ever seen. And she laughed and we had a nice little cute little moment.
You two having
we don't
a moment.
Know each other and she does not know me from Adam, but I did see her act Kesha in the wild. And so I had to call it out. She was not stealing it off the bar. Just like, I didn't steal that strawberry shortcake, bitch. You're throwing accusations on Seth Meyers.
Oh, my God. We can't get into this. But
no, we can't.
We would never do anything like this today.
No, I was 23.
We were 23.
And I'm a human with complexities.
I got my own imperfection.
Did you just start singing at the same time? I know that me and my sister share a bloodline.
A bloodline. We share a bloodline.
I have an I Don't Think So, Honey.
Okay. This is Matt Rogers. I Don't Think So, Honey. His time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey. I have thought my inseam was different than it is for years.
No.
Fuck.
It's the inner seam.
The wrong inseam for years. For years, I've been saying my inseam is a 32. Suddenly, I don't know what happened. I realized, every single time I wear pants, they're too long. It's because my inseam is 30. I have been... Bowen Yang, I know my own length of my legs. I am a 30. I have short, stocky
seconds.
Legs and a long torso. It is part of me. This is me now. And this was me then. Since I started giving my inseam, I have been a 30. My pants have always been too long. I'm always wondering, why do I always need the bottom of my
seconds.
Pants tailored? Is there something wrong with my body? No, there's something wrong with my brain. There's something wrong with my mother, who told me I was a 32 inseam my entire life. Well, Katrina Rogers, I have news for you. I don't think so, honey. I'm a 30 inseam. God damn it, mama.
And that's 1 minute. I'm sorry. You took me on a journey there because I thought you first started out saying you didn't know what an inseam was. And I was going to say,
it's my inseam.
I feel like this is something you should have gotten to the bottom of years ago.
Honey, 100%. But I have been, so for years.
Like, it's not something that like your mom tells you and then you, it's not like, you know, like one of your uncles has like a secret family. It's not like that. It's like no, this is a thing that you can sort of verify for yourself without having someone else tell you.
I know, but that doesn't mean I can't blame my mother. And what I would say is for years, and maybe still even in my heart, for years, I identified as a 30-32. 30 waist, 32 inseam.
Oh.
Not only, it's literally flipped. I am now a 32 waist, even sometimes bordering on 33, depending on what the situation is.
Sure, sure, sure.
But my waist has gone up. My inseam is a 30. I am a 32-30. And now that makes me feel like...
I refuse to believe I'm a 32-30, bitch. And I
can I tell you something about
I
you?
I don't believe we have Skinny. The same legs.
Yeah, literally, Bowen, we have the same legs. We'll compare next time I see you.
You are literally feet taller than me.
Bowen, my torso is very long. I have a swimmer's body. You don't.
God bless. Must be nice.
Excuse me. This is about me and my inseam.
I'm sorry.
Wait, are we the same? Are we both 32-30?
You know what? Depending. I lied. I'm like a 33-30. Sometimes 34. If it's the winter.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if it's like January or we're having a hard time, like, it might even go up to some. The other day I was getting fitted for work and the girl goes, okay, so we need to get you a 34. And I said, excuse me. Like, Mama. And by the way, we're not putting any stigma on any waist size.
But
any waist
like,
size is beautiful. That was just two sizes, sometimes even three sizes bigger than I usually was.
I don't want this to fall off.
Right. And I was like, oh, that feels too big for me. And then they explained like, oh, when you're getting fitted for things for like a job like that, you want to get something a little bit bigger so that it can be brought in. Like, because that's just the way it is. But anyway, it's not me saying like if my waist right now is a 33, 34, that's fucking great. I just should know that. And I should know that my inseam is a 30 because that will never change. And I've been saying 32 for the longest time. And I swear to God, I'm so happy now. I just threw out all my pants, Bowen, and I went to fucking Banana Republic itself and I got some new pants. And I'm so happy because they're all 30 inseam. And I feel like finally,
it has happened to me.
My pants are correctly fitting.
I'm very happy for you.
So happy.
Pants are really tough.
They can be some of the toughest.
We don't talk about how it's a deeply personal journey. And sometimes it's lifelong. I still am not really finding the right jeans. I've avoided jeans. I'm finally ready to go back into jeans.
Yeah, you really don't wear jeans.
They don't look good on me. Oh. But I believe, it's like my journey with love. I believe it's out there. But I have had bad luck. And maybe it's because I'm not genetically built for it.
No, girl. I'll tell you what we're going to do. The next time I'm in New York, we're going to go to APC.
I love APC.
We're going to get you some jeans because we're going to figure this out. We're going to get to the bottom of this one.
Okay.
Because there's no reason you should be feeling anything but excited about your legs, which are aspirational.
They need to be contextualized properly with the right shoes, right shorts or pants.
You are so powerful in a short.
I know, but I can't wear them all the time.
Because the legs are lagging.
I love my legs, but I'm saying the pants, the way that pants are produced in this world, not meant for me.
We're going to get to the bottom of this.
Okay.
Sometimes that's how I feel about shirts. Like sometimes I'm like, because my torso is on the long side, I feel like oftentimes like something will fit me in the shoulders and then be like a little too short on the bottom, Matt, which is never something anyone needs.
No, of course. But Matt, you are a very well-proportioned person. You know this.
Hey, Bobby! All right. So this will be Bowen Yanks. I don't think so, honey. That's always so exciting.
Yeah.
And he has 1 minute on the clock. And Bowen Yang, I don't think so, honey. Time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. This video game, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, it is stoppering all culture consumption for me. It's the first thing I do when I wake up. It's the last thing I do before I go to bed. I am 3 episodes behind on Drag Race, and you know I need to catch up because our good girl Joel Kim Booster is guest judging.
Next week.
This week.
Oh, this week.
I have not watched a single Housewives reunion from between Miami and Beverly Hills, and I'm usually up to speed on all that.
30 seconds.
It was a struggle. It felt like homework watching the Traitors finale, and I never thought I would say those words. I was on a reading tear with my books, and all of it has stopped because of this game that is so beautiful, so effervescently fun, narratively doing so many things that I've never seen done in media before.
5 seconds.
This game is a celebration of video games in general. It is a celebration of fun, and that's why I love it, and that's why I can't get away from it.
That's 1 minute. So that was one of those sneaky, I don't think so, honeys, that I thought it's you were actually going to express a qualm about it, and I was like really shocked.
My qualm is that it's I haven't been able to do anything else.
It's disruptive. It's disruptively good.
It's disruptively good. I mean, Matt, this game has you play these like mini games that are like, oh, you're throwing around a soccer ball for 5 minutes. Oh, you're playing a card game, which is amazing, by the way, called Queen's Blood. Oh, it's such a slay. Mm. But it makes you first. I normally don't give a shit about these mini games. Mm. In video games, I'm like, oh, let's just keep it moving. Let's get the main thing going. I don't want to be distracted by these side things.
No.
The side things are just as fun. I want to win at the side games. I want to achieve the highest rank at the side games. There's a game where you play the piano and you have to like, it's like Dance Dance Revolution, which you know is very formative for me. Mm-hmm. This game is pure fun. Oh, I have another item. Thanks, Honey, really quickly.
Okay.
I don't think so, honey. Alex English. No. Just very, very, very Alex English. He changed. I got Stefan on air on SNL for this Lisa from Temecula sketch.
This was really good.
He switched up the cue cards on me. Ega was supposed to have the line, I am neurodivergent, but she did not say neurodivergent. She said something else. But then instead, I see on the cards, points to Bowen before the next line. And I have never felt a more pure, even blend of horror and joy than that moment.
It was so fucking
It was
funny.
The craziest moment of my life. I thought, I was like, nothing's going to beat like, you know, the first Lisa in terms of like, oh, because we're black. Like that was, my soul left my body. This was something else, but just as thrilling and satisfying. I was just like, this is the craziest thing. For Ego to point to me and say that line is fucking demonic. And Alex English, I love you to death, but you are dastardly.
You're on burn notice.
You're on burn notice.
Preemptively. You just got burned. Here's your notice.
Yeah.
That was so funny. What a great episode altogether that was. Like, I actually, all my friends went out and I stayed home to like watch it because I was like, I needed a night off anyway. Because we did game show on Friday. I went out. Saturday,
you wanted to watch Ari.
Well, I had intel that there was going to be some special sketches, and I did want to see her live performances, and they were great. And I had serious FOMO because I knew that a lot of
the
our
girls
pals
were there.
Yeah, and then I saw you guys playing. What are you guys singing karaoke or playing video games afterwards? What were you guys?
We were singing karaoke in my office, but Ben Platt and Noah Galvin were there.
I heard
we were all hanging out in Ari's dressing room after the show. She had to hop on a jet right to LA to go to the Oscars and get in glam.
Yeah,
she did not make it to the after party, but she loves Josh and Aaron. She loves Dix the Musical, and I will reveal that Josh did dare her. He goes, I will pay you $1 if for Best Original Song, you open up the envelope and say, it's a tie between Dix the Musical and Theater Camp. $1.
She couldn't make that happen.
She said, okay, I'll think about it. Okay. Like, just doing the bit, obviously, but just being like, okay, yeah, let me sleep on it.
Let me think about how I can make that work.
Anyway, it was a very fun night, but I'm in LA next week for, you know, undisclosed reasons having to do with the podcast, maybe. But I want to go out. I want to have a night out with you, with my girl and the girls and the other girls, maybe post Drag Race.
That can be arranged. That can be arranged for sure. In fact, there is something happening. So I'll talk to you off air about it. But just final words. I just want to say my best dress was a tie between Sandra Hüller and Carey Mulligan.
Carey, both. Black was in.
I thought they were stunning. Sandra Hüller was giving me like glamorous, like movie star of yesteryear. I loved her sleek ponytail hair, the shoulder. Makeup. It was powerful. I thought she was a real winner. Her movies did amazing. And she may not have won, but she looked incredible. I'm super like in awe of her. And Carey Mulligan looked unbelievable. So fucking chic and elegant. Like,
The
mermaid bottom of that dress, the gloves, like
the cutout, the scalloped thing. Oh, just so fucking gorgeous.
She looked absolutely stunning. Like for real.
I do. I'm biased, but Cynthia and Ari looked amazing. Jean-Baptiste Valle, fucking chic, cunty choice.
Yeah, they looked very good together. I'm sure obviously that was like, you know, by design. Yeah, they were representing.
I do want to shout out Gucci did some beautiful dresses for Lily Gladstone.
Oh yeah.
For the show and for the Vanity Fair party. Like both of her dresses were fucking stunning and such beautiful homages or just like tributes to like native dress. Like just yes. So beautiful. Like the feather motif and that color for the Oscars gown. I was like, oh, that's yeah. So stunning. The earrings. Well,
they're gorgeous. And I really feel like, you know, I feel like it's just the beginning and like,
oh, it's truly
huge fans in us. And, you know, they said they really want to host SNL.
I would love for them to host SNL. I think they would be amazing. And oh, I have tea.
What?
Not on Lily, but I will say I have on good authority that Lily's mother watches SNL every week and calls me her son.
I'm gagging.
Lily Gladstone's mother says, my son is on. Look at my son. I'm Lily's brother.
Oh my God, that is so gorge. Well, we're fans of Lily. Lily's performance in Killers of the Flower Moon was just beautiful. Beautiful. And there's going to be much more, I'm sure. I'm excited about this Hulu show. I did not know they were the star of this Hulu show. I just only saw the preview during the Oscars and I was like, oh, what's that? It has Riley Keough, who's like low-key so fucking good.
So fucking good.
So I'm excited about that. And then I wanted to say two other things, which is, I feel like we haven't really gotten to talk about this, but two things everyone should go see, which are literally created by friends of ours and starring friends of ours. The first of which is the Emma Stone produced
Problemista,
written and directed by Julio Torres.
Fantastic.
This was great. Fucking Tilda Swinton's amazing in it. Like, Julio has done it again. Like, Greta Titelman is in it. Greta Lee, James
Greta's
Scully,
so
RZA, fucking, you know what I mean? Like, it's got such a great cast. Oh my God. River Ramirez, like, stole the movie
from
me.
Hilarious.
Just the funniest human. Like,
God.
So good. I mean, you know,
Larry Owens.
So good. Just like, I mean, gotta go see that one. And then, of course, we haven't even mentioned it, but Oh Mary.
Oh my God.
Oh Mary is, I mean, if you're in New York and you're not fighting tooth and nail to go see this or you haven't already, you are not doing it right.
The funniest theater ever, I think. Ever.
It's so funny. Like, I mean, Cole Escola, just incredible. They're our idol and have always been like the best in the biz. Again, James Scully also in that. A little moment for James Scully lately.
Mm-hmm.
And Conrad Okamura and just the best. Like, so you gotta go see Old Mary. You will not be disappointed. It is so good. It feels...
with understudies by Peter Smith and Hannah Solo, good friends of ours as well.
Yes, yes. All around, just great things, good peeps and all that. And this was Lost Culch.
This was Lost Culch.
This is a long episode of Lost Culch.
I know. We end with the song. Something about him is made for somebody.
You better go
like me.
Baby,
come on.
You picked her key too. You usually never do that.
I never do that.
Baby, come on.
For more of that, listen to Eternal Sunshine. Bye.
True story.
Ariana Grande Butera.
Bye.
Bye.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy.
Yeah.
Right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts,
the medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.